A December 26th Republican American story detailed Connecticut's new minimum wage law. In accordance with legislation approved this year by the Democratic-controlled legislature and Democratic Governor Ned Lamont, the state's hourly minimum wage gradually will increase from $10.10 to $15 by June of 2023. The minimum wage hit $11 back on October 1st, if you remember. Reporter Paul Hughes noted that under the law, the governor and the legislature may suspend increases in the minimum wage if the state's real gross domestic product decreases in two consecutive quarters, as reported by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. Now, real GDP represents the market value of goods and services adjusted for inflation. The Bureau of Economic Analysis is basically the arm of the U.S. Department of Commerce. So the suspension provision should provide no measure of comfort to Connecticut residents and business people. Okay.
Connecticut, here we go again.
Yeah, well, Connecticut's economy, Brad, has been struggling for some time now. The fact that Governor Lamont and the legislature nonetheless went ahead with the $15 legislation is concerning. As had been noted here and even elsewhere, $15 mandates risk a host of devastating economic consequences. Now, to talk more about this, we'd like to bring in our first guest this morning, State Senator Paul Formica. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Happy good morning. New Year. Good morning.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. How was your Christmas?
You know, they seem to come and go so quick these days, but it was wonderful. Thank you very much. I hope yours was as well.
It was, absolutely. And it's great to have you back on the show this morning as well. So, this minimum wage, I think what a lot of people aren't aware of is something that I had just mentioned a moment ago, and that if the state's real gross domestic product decreases in two consecutive quarters, as reported by the U.S. Bureau of Economy Analysis, then really it can be suspended, correct?
Well, that's what the provision in the law provides the governor as an option, and we hope that, you know, one, he doesn't need it because the economy is getting better, but the fact of the matter is the GDP from 2008 to 2018 declined by 7%, and there were a number of periods that, you know, the two-quarter clause would have been enacted over that period of time. So, you know, the fact that we're just continuing to pile on more costs to Connecticut taxpayers and businesses, you know, is concerning.
When you see the economy on the national level and why that doesn't translate into the state of Connecticut, and how do you assess that?
Well, as you said, the economy on the national level has been up 19% over that period of our 7% decline. And you know, it's the tax and spend policies that led us through that 10-year period. And I would suggest that the new policies up in Hartford by the majority party, moving toward a progressive socialist agenda, you know, where you're looking at giving away free college to a community college system that's backwards by $80 million, looking at, you know, single-payer health care, driving, you know, our insurance businesses out of our state that provide a good quality health care now. So, you know, just the direction that people are moving seems to me to be the wrong direction. And just, I think they misunderstand the effects of the burden that they're placing on the people of the state of Connecticut.
Mm. Wow. And there's really no sign of the Connecticut economy running parallel with the national economy, correct?
Well, it doesn't seem to be, given the data by leading economists. And you know, our budget, unlike the bipartisan budget of 2 years ago when our numbers were closer, we had 18-18, you know, we sat down, 18-18 in the Senate, and we sat down and we worked through every line item in that budget and came up with a budget that, you know, had a $700 million surplus. you know, we're just, this governor and the majority legislator added nearly $2 billion in new tax expansions to make their budget work. And, you know, that to me seems to be the wrong direction of where we're going.
You know, it's one thing I read just prior to you coming on is that the new minimum wage hit $11 back on October 1st. Now, keep that just in your pocket for 1 second. All right. Now, something else that I said is that we'd have to show, what, 2 quarters of a decrease in GDP here in the state of Connecticut, which it has been showing quarter after quarter a decrease in the state of Connecticut. But we haven't had 2 quarters, obviously, since October 1st. So let's just fast forward time a little bit, and let's say that we get through 2 quarters, you know, the last quarter of calendar year 2019 and the first quarter of calendar year 2020. And let's just say that there's been a decrease in both. Then based on that and all the information that we have, Connecticut may not $11. Well, it's already hit $11 on October 1st, but it may go to a decrease, correct?
Well, it could, and I agree with you that the possibility is very strong that it could exist. But in the statute, I believe it says the governor and the legislature may suspend.
May.
It doesn't
not shall.
It mandatory, right?
Right.
So the real question is, why is that? Why is that clause even in the statute? I mean, unless they have some experience and they think, oh, my God, you know, we don't think that this is a really good policy, so let's hedge our bets and put this clause in here, which allows us to, you know, to back it up, which flies in the face of, you know, the comments from the majority party saying this is landmark legislation that's going to help Connecticut's families when in fact it's really helping a very select few, and it's hurting more than it's helping.
Well, and to that point, if that is how they felt, then wouldn't either don't have that clause in there at all, or change that one word from may to shall if they feel that strongly on it.
It's exactly my point. I agree with you 100% on that.
Well,
so I mean, then you add, you know, now we're looking at a paid family and medical leave, which is, you know, going to begin the process of accumulating a 0.5% tax on everybody's paycheck, and then compiling those dollars, feeding an increased bureaucracy of you know, 130 to 150 new people in the Department of Labor to manage this new program. And,
yeah.
And that's going to be an impact on the people of the state of Connecticut. And unsustainable, I think, if you do the math. You talk about tolls, they want to add tolls, increases in sales tax that are coming up on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, across Connecticut's economy, and the increase, you know, in the food tax, you know, all of these things really just add to the burden. And people who don't think the tolls are going to increase costs down the board, it's really silly, because businesses that pay these tolls on their trucks are going to pass the increases of the cost of goods and services to the people who use those. And
that's right.
And it's just, you know, just like the minimum wage. I mean, you're talking about $11 an hour. But let's, you know, it doesn't take into effect the latter effect, if you want to call it.
No, you're right.
Those people who are making 11 now are going to say, hey, wait a minute, I got to make 12, and those people that are making 12 are going to say, hey, wait a minute, I got to make 13. And it, you know, it works its way up the ladder. And so it's not just that one increased cost. It's the entire cost. And those costs are going to have to be passed on, or.
That's right. And not only right, they're going to pass that cost increase to the retailer, and then the retailer is then going to pass it on to the consumer who are buying these goods. Don't think for a minute that we're not going to feel that pinch. It's an indirect cost that's being passed on to us. But also the other thing that you just touched on this, and I want to kind of, you know, go back to it for a moment, and that is. You would think that some Democrats would think that the minimum, with a raise in minimum wage, is a good thing to for the low income earner, that they'll be earning, hey, at least another buck or two in their pocket. When in essence, or maybe I should say in reality, when you talk to the small business owner, the mom and pops that are that own these businesses, what's happening is that it's actually having an opposite effect, where they're not even hiring anymore. In fact, the contrary, they're laying people off or just eliminating positions. I know myself, several small business owners. One of them is a coffee shop owner, and she goes, we're actually getting rid of two people here. And I'm saying, you're getting rid of two people? She goes, yeah, sadly. One person was going back to school in January. She goes, but just we're not going to replace her. And I said, well, what does this have to do with business? She goes, oh, no, it has to do with the minimum wage increase.
Well, and that's what happens in business, right? There's two ways to increase, you know, your profits. One is increase revenue. The other is decrease cost. And you know, there's a tipping point that how much can you charge for a cup of coffee? You know, you can't keep going up and up and up on the price because of the burden imposed on you by, you know, an overreaching state government. So you have to take steps in your own hand. Either you're not replacing people, as this coffee person business owner is doing, or you're repositioning, or you're just simply laying people off. Or in some cases, these small mom and pops are going to say, you know, we're had it. Our profit margin isn't that great. We're just going to close. You know, I read an article the other day about Seattle that's at $15, and you know, restaurant is closing, and I think the writer of the article indicated that, you know, she was proudly progressive, but this particular policy is harming everybody. And now, instead of making $15 an hour, she's making zero because the restaurant closed.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, this is Brad.
Hi, Brad.
Know what gets frustrated, and people do not understand it. I know I don't. It just seems in this state, and it continues. They have no qualms about going higher on prices. And you wonder when it's all going to stop. You wonder, you know, why they want to continue this kind of presentation here in the state of Connecticut. It's the same every day. When is it going to change, and how do we change it?
Well, I mean, prices really don't even go down, though, Brad. Prices are always going to go up, sadly, you know.
Well, I know it's going to go. I know that. However, we don't even get a hint.
Yeah, there's prices go up due to inflationary factors and factors outside of our control. But the fact of the matter is some of these policies are within our control, and we can change the direction, you know, of the state of Connecticut. We can, you know, we can work on the spending of each of these agencies and, you know, empower these leaders of these agencies to, you know, as I did when I was first selecting the town of East Lyme, we came into a difficult period. I said, listen, you know, I'm not a public works guy. Here's your budget, but I want you to return me 2% in efficiencies. That's your job. You figure it out. And you know, I did that across the board, and these agency heads returned 2%, some cases more. By empowering them, and that just doesn't work that way in the state of Connecticut. We've, you know, this majority party added $100 million in new personal services. That's new payroll by expanding the roles of unions, creating new unions in our state, giving them double-digit raises over a period of years. No job security, which means no layoffs over 3 years. You know, you just can't sustain those policies. That's $100 million that could have been put somewhere, you know, to benefit our economy instead of growing the union roles, which, listen, unions and our state workers do a great job, but they're pretty well paid and they're pretty well taken care of in their benefits. Yeah. So to increase that, I think, just goes to your point. When is enough enough?
Yeah.
I think we're at that point, and hopefully, you know, the people that are listening will call the, you know, the Senate Democrats. It's, you know, 860-240-8600, and say, listen, don't consider tolls in the next few weeks. Don't consider these these price increases and these policy changes that are going to add a burden to us on Main Street.
Senator, I ask everybody in about 30 seconds or less, because we got to take a break. Are you foreseeing a special session in the month of January for the transportation plan?
You know, that's what we've heard. We had the special session for the hospital deal, which was,
right,
you know, another fiasco from the previous administration. And the restaurant thing, which they're trying to, you know, mess around with the, you know, with the payroll there. And that's what they're talking about. But I just read from a prominent longtime state representative on the Democrat side that he didn't think there were the votes. So I can't imagine that he would bring it forward if he wasn't sure of the votes. And the reason that it hasn't been passed now in a state that has a Democrat majority in the Senate, the House, and the governor's seat, which means they can pass whatever they want. If it hasn't been passed yet, whether it's tolls or anything else, it means they don't have the votes for it.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Happy
thank
New
you,
Year to you, my friend.
Thank you for all you do and keeping the word out.
You
happy
got that.
Happy New Year to you and everybody out there.
It's a pleasure.